Thank you very much. Thank you very much. My name is Norm, and I'm an alcoholic. And I certainly want to thank Bill and the committee for the opportunity to be here this evening and participate and be part of the meeting and the opportunity to see all my screaming deacons down here in the second row. Also having the opportunity to welcome all of the new people that are here tonight for your first 30 days in Alcoholics Anonymous. Obviously, we're very happy to have you, and I'm sure that if you are new, you're aware of the fact you've now associated yourself with one of the most unpopular fellowships in the world. Nobody begins his life wanting to become an alcoholic and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous because, frankly, there's not a hell of a lot of class to being an alcoholic and not a lot of status connected to it. And we don't issue out pins, you know, says you're a 32nd degree alcoholic, you know, you run around the city and show everybody and everybody's delighted over you, glad you made it and all that. And as a matter of fact, an alcoholic is not an alcoholic the day before he gets to AA. He's a heavy drinker and a victim of unusual circumstances, but he sure as hell not an alcoholic. And he goes to any length that to prove that. You change environments and jobs and wives and go to jail and some alkies die out there. You know, man, I ain't going to AA. I'd rather die. And so he dies. I'll show you, man. I ain't coming to AA in them lousy meetings. So, you know, that's how unpopular this fellowship is. I mean, just nobody wants to get to AA. It's not a vocation. We don't go down to our high school counselor and he said, you know, Norm, what would you like to be? And I said, an alcoholic. And he said, marvelous. You know, we got a new program for jackasses like you. So you go out and rip up the city for 15 years and you end up in AA and you've achieved the ultimate of your life. Well, that isn't what it's all about. But now, once that you run through all you can go through and you totally and finally you surrender, you become a survivor. And the people that are here this evening, we're the survivors. And you find out, by God, this is probably something I've been looking for all my life. You find out that you never have to take another drink again if you don't want to. You find a group of people who will know most everything about you. You will still accept you. Who are not necessarily interested in where you've been or where you're trying to go, but they're damned interested in what you're trying to do today. And as an alcoholic, that's a hell of a deal, you know, because when you're out there drinking, there ain't many people interested in you. Let's say, here you're going to jail or leaving town, and they're delighted over that. You know, other than that, who the hell cares? People used to say to my wife, you know, where's Norm? Well, he's down in Texas. He's in Texas. He's on a job down there. He'll be gone about 3 months. Isn't that marvelous? You know, they're always glad to get you the hell out of there. Well, now you get in here today and you find out that, by God, here's some people that care. And my sponsor and all these flaky friends, they said, we care about you, buddy. And if you want to do something about your drinking, it's damnable easy. All you got to do is use that nickel therapy. You put the money in the telephone, you make the call. And you make the call before you take the drink. And if you'll do that, I'll be down to see you. And by God, I made the calls, and they were people of their word. They came down to see me, and they didn't sit there with that pity and hate that I've been used to all my life, but they sat there with compassion and with understanding. They were guys from AA, and that's got to be the best deal I ever had in my life, and I'm a guy that looked half the world out there trying to find the best deal, you see, and I never found it, not until I got here, until I got to this Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're new, I suggest that you stick around a while and buy this package, and you too may say someday this is the best deal you ever had in your life. In qualification, the initial statement I made, I'm an alcoholic. I'm not by any stretch of the imagination an authority, a consultant, counselor on the program Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an example, good or bad, that AA works, that it has been necessary for me to take a drink, steal anything, or go to jail now for over 23 years. I'm sure that nobody here tonight was really overly excited or even impressed over that statement, but I am, obviously, or I'd have never brought it up. What the hell, you know that. And you never know, we may get a pension program going here in AA, you know. And Wesley and Tom and I, we want to get credit for all our time. So we bring it up every time we have the chance. And even if we don't have the chance, we bring it up anyway, you know. But if you're sitting out there and you're new, why, this is an overwhelming thing to hear somebody talk about not having any booze out there for 23 years. It's an incredible thing. And I can sympathize with that. Hell, it hadn't been that long ago that I can't remember sitting in that first AA meeting. I was 29 years old. And to save you a lot of mental calculation, I'm 52. Yeah. You're supposed to say you don't look it. But anyway. I forgot what I was talking about. But anyway. I was sitting there, and I was 29 years old, and the guy stood up in front of the meeting. He said, I haven't had a drink for 9.5 years, and I almost fell out of the chair. I thought, 9.5 years? You know, how the hell could a guy go 9.5 years out there on that city street when they... You know, without any booze, dealing with all those rotten people, meeting his responsibilities, being honest, and he hasn't snuck a hooker for 9.5 years. I thought, oh, that's impossible. No, I might have gone for 9 months, but I can't go for 9.5 years. And immediately, you know, it became a 9.5-year program. You know, what the hell will I do now for the next 9.5 years? Yes. what'll I do with all my time, you know? And what'll my friends do if I'm not there to guide them through life? Why, they'll all die. That's what's going to happen to all my friends out there. And you become concerned about this, and you keep going to meetings, as they mentioned. If you knew what your sponsor and your friends are going to tell you to go to a lot of meetings, to keep going to a lot of meetings, because when you do, you find out that, by God, it ain't a 9.5-year program. It's a one day at a time. It's what's going down right now, and that's what it's all about. 24 hours, and I might suggest that if it's going good for you right now, you know, don't quiz it, don't question it. Don't say, why is it going so good? You know, forget it, man. Get all of it. If it's going good, I'll tell you, because it'll get salty later on. I'll guarantee you that. Now, boy, grab on and get her right now. But you find out that you take care of the day, chances are the week's going to take care of itself. And will the month and will the year, and before you know it, hell, 23 years have run by. And it really seems like yesterday that I was sitting there in that first AA meeting wondering why I was there, because as I mentioned, I wasn't overjoyed over the fact that I was an alcoholic and had to come to AA, and I sat there and thought, why am I an alcoholic? You know, what created my alcoholism? And you begin to rationalize, and I blame people, places, and things. All alcoholics do, and I blame my the people, my family, my nationality, Irish, Italian, never fit. Look like an Irishman, got a WAP name, and you just don't cut it out there. And that, and I, you know, you immediately begin blaming the family for all of those problems. But being Irish and Italian, if you're interested, and I'm sure you're not, but all that really means is you're not overly intelligent. That's all that means. It isn't going to have any bearing on whether you're an alcoholic or not, although we may have a leg up on it out there. You know, the Italians made it, the Irish drank it, and I came to AA, and that's what it was all about. But the upsetting factor was that there was nobody in my family who was alcoholic, and I come from a big family and a heavy drinking family, and I'm the only one that's alcoholic. And I thought, why have I been given the crust to carry the whole rotten outfit when I'm the best in the family? There was never a question about it. Typical alcoholic, you know, you ask yourself occasionally, who's the best? You are. Yeah, you are, Norm. Well, then you get to wondering, if you're the best, then why do you go to meetings and your family doesn't? So you move on to something else after that, you know. But it was not my family, and it was not my nationality, and God knows it wasn't the environment. I thought, because I was born and raised in L.A., you know, anybody born and raised in Los Angeles has got to be hacked up one way or another, but that may be true. But it isn't going to have any bearing on your alcoholism. I was able to figure this out one day, and I did it by myself. It was a giant decision on my part. I am alcoholic by virtue of the whiskey I drank. You know, wasn't that? That was a hell of a decision. Yes, it wasn't the people and the places and the things. Man, it was that booze out there. I drank it as hard and as fast as I could drink it. And somewhere in that lottery in my life, I crossed some invisible line from the social aspect of drinking into the compulsive area, where one's too many and a thousand aren't enough. Where I'm looking for the answer to living on a quart of whiskey and I can't find it. Where my whole life revolves around booze. People that sell it, people that drink it, and after half a dozen drinks, I have no control over my destiny. I don't know how it's going to end up. So the booze was the problem. That and this guy here, you know. Me, the personality. I'm the biggest enemy I ever had, because no matter where I went, I was the first guy to get there. You see, everything always starts, you know, right here within myself. Right there. I got that old alky personality. I'm a rationalizer, a justifier, a compromiser, and I got a rotten attitude. And, man, you don't eat a hell of a lot more than that when you get right down to it. Yeah, I had all that before I took my first drink. Traveled half the world, and half my life I made a complete ass of myself. I spent money I didn't have buying things I didn't need, trying to impress people I didn't like. And I think that's the story of most alcoholics. You run all over hell to tell some guy something you're not. And you'll never see the guy again. You know, that's the frustrating part, to follow up to see if he's still impressed about the things you told him, you know. Sat around them gin mills and drank that whiskey and built them castles in the air. Talk to them high rollers, and they say, what do you do, Norm? Well, I do it all. That's what I do, buddy. Yeah. Hell yeah, I'm the general manager of the universe, buddy. That's what the hell I am. And don't you forget it. You're impressed, aren't you? And then I might leave and go out and get in my car and roll all the windows up and drive away to make you think I had an air conditioner, you know. The alcoholic, and that story I heard many years ago from that Texican. He didn't know it, but he was telling my life story about... You may have heard it, but I think it's worth repeating, and I'm going to tell it anyway. It's clean. And it's about the blacksmith that was making a horseshoe, you know, and he pounds out that horseshoe, and he throws it down on the ground, and the old cowboy standing there watching it, and he reaches down and picks up that horseshoe, and quick, he throws it back down on the ground, and the old blacksmith turned to him, and he said, hot, wasn't it? And the old cowboy said, no, it doesn't take me long to look at a horseshoe. It kind of gets to you a little. But yeah, I thought that's the story of my life, yeah. I wandered around the city picking up them hot horseshoes. You know, justifying the stupidity of my activities out there. Yeah, laying on the sidewalk, and the guy says, Norm, you're drunk on the sidewalk. Oh, no, I'm not. I like sidewalks. That's why I am. A lifetime of the justification of my existence that I came to AA, and if you're new, buddy, you don't have to go through that any longer. Isn't that a hell of a deal? You don't have to impress anybody anymore. You don't have to do anything but be yourself. And you know, if I don't get any more than that, and the sobriety I've enjoyed here in AA, I can say without reservation I'm overpaid, because I've been able to spend a lot of days out there on that city street, and all I've had to be is me. I'm not here as a competitor in AA. That's the beauty of it all. I'm not competing with the guy you had last year or the guy you're going to have tomorrow or the one you have next year. No, I'm just here as myself, no more, no less. Because early in the program of AA, the people told me, oh, don't impress us in AA, friend. We've been impressed by experts in AA. You see, because we are all experts in AA. None in Kansas, I'm sure, but we... I got a lot out of my home group, man. You come to my home group and you ask us anything, we comment on it one way or another. If we don't know what you're talking about, we generally say, that's true, you know, and we go on from there. You see, so immediately you find out that wherever you've been, somebody got there before you did. I mentioned to a guy one night, it was pretty new, and I thought he'd be impressed. I said, you know, I've been in a bucket about 25 times, and he said, the hell you have, Norm, I did that in a year. You know, stop. Right away you learn that no matter what you drink, why, there's guys drank more booze out there than you thought was built. So if you're new, I suggest, come on in, if you will, and buy the package that's available to you here, and take it on out there tomorrow on that city street, and spend a day just being yourself. It's a hell of an experience, and an experience that no alcoholic should be without. Tonight I'd like to tell you a little bit about what I was like, what happened, what I'm trying to be like now, what the program of AA means to me, and maybe some things that I've used to stay sober over a period of time, because frankly, I don't know a better way to talk about it. I don't know a better way to explain Alcoholics Anonymous. When a guy says to me, how does it work? It's simple. It works because of the AA book, and without the book, there isn't any program. Obviously, that's the number one. And when I came in, and I don't want to talk as an authority on it or anything, but when I came in, they said, you got to have the book. And my sponsor said, if you don't buy the book, you get drunk. It's that easy. Now, you lay 3.5 on a line, you get it, Norm. That's the way it's got to be, because that's where the program is. And it's a good deal, that book. You know, they got a little inflation. What is it, 580? But so's 10 high. So what the hell? It's kind of a break-even when you put her in there. So the book is where it is, and that's where it all begins. And secondly, it's one drunk talking to another drunk, and between the two of you, stay sober. What the hell? What do a couple of drunks talk about? They talk about the hack and the hustle they had out there in the street. They talk about coming to the program and finding a better way to operate. They talk about things they're using today in order to stay out of trouble. And to me, that relates to what I was like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like now. As far as the story as to what I was like, it's the same. Hadn't been necessary to get a new story. Difficult getting new stories. Time-consuming. You get ill out there, too. Sometimes you never get back to tell it. That's the bad part of it all, you know. When you do get back, you find out the guys you sponsored are now your sponsor. That's a hell of a no, too. So, you know, getting new stories are very difficult. Mine is the same. I'm a guy with an attitude problem, as I told you. If you got an attitude problem, you got a hell of a problem, because life and living is a matter of attitude. You know it, and I know it. I get up in the morning, I got a rotten attitude, I got a rotten day out there. Boy, I don't change it, I got a rotten week, or a month, or a year. Hell, 62, I had a bad program and a bad attitude, and had a rotten year all year. But it all begins right here within myself. As I mentioned, everywhere Norm goes. I'm the biggest problem I ever had in my life. I'm the guy that stands out there and reacts and overreacts to every damn thing out there. I'm the guy that's going to buck all the systems, and I'm the guy that's going to show everybody out there all of those things. Well, if you're going to have that kind of an attitude, you're going to have a hell of a lot of trouble. And I did. I started going to the can because of the bad attitude. I wasn't drinking. That was in the middle 30s. I wasn't drinking in those days. Obviously, I was too young, but I was stealing. I happen to be a thief by trade. I am an alcoholic by absorption. That's the way it went out. Open up the midnight auto supply out there in the San Gabriel Valley. I started popping them hubcaps out there, you know, kind of a lark in the beginning, and then we found out I'd make a little money on it. So we branched the program out and got other accessories. And then it got to be a job together up all that crap. We stole a whole car, you know, and then overnight the business just moved out from under, as you might say. I was a total success. God gave everybody something, and that's what he gave me, I suppose, was a touch for that business. I had no conscience about it one way or another. I felt, man, if you're jerky enough to park your car out there, friend, you're asking for trouble. Yeah, and I cruised the parking lot tonight just for a little bit. You never really get over it. Some are sicker than others, let's face it. Yeah. It's a fantasy land, you know, and Alkies are fantasy people. I live in the fantasy land out there, the great dreamer, and that's what it was. I
felt, you know, that I was going to become the greatest car thief in the world, and for maybe 2 or 3 years, or 2 years, year and a half, maybe I was. And then the inevitable happened. I was arrested, went in front of my first judge, got 7 years in Whittier Reformatory.
Through the efforts of a lot of juice, probably, and some people getting some people, I got a release. I wasn't out there long enough to brush my teeth. And I came back to Los Angeles, and I had no change of attitude. So if you don't have any change of attitude, what the hell is going to change? I'm still looking for a fantasy land out there. I'm the dreamer. And booze is a natural for dreamers. I walked into booze about 1940. It was Easter week, and it's appropriate, I suppose. This is Easter week. It was Easter week in 1940. Balboa Beach, the Rendezvous Ballroom, Stan Kenton, and Padre Beer. Man, we got it moving right there. We'd suck on that old Padre, get a little buzz on, you know, and go in the dance hall and dance with the dollies and act four times drunker than what we were and, you know, breathe on them. You know, you got to let them know we got a little booze. Well, that was a big operation in those days with the big dance hall, Sebastian's Cotton Club down in Culver City and the Trianon there in Southgate. And there were a bunch of them out there. And we'd drink that Padre, get a little buzz. This is the way it went. And in the beginning, and I'm not alcoholic in the beginning. I'm having a lot of fun. I didn't get any trouble. But I worked at it. I moved out of that Padre beer into that Rainier Ale, the old Green Death. And from the Green Death, I shot right into that 10 High, that old whiskey, man. And when I found whiskey, I found the greatest thing made since money and girls. Because whiskey drinking, it brings you to attention right now. Man, that's what I like about whiskey. It gets you downtown. And, you know, now. I want to get downtown now. And that whiskey gets you downtown. And not only that, when you were drinking that 10 high, you never got the feeling you're being cheated, I'll tell you that. That economically, it was a good buy. 60 cents a pint in those days, and you felt every 11 drop. Man, that baby burned, going, and coming. You know how it'll come up, and it runs out your nose and makes your eyes water. You're standing there gagging at one of your good friends and going, ain't it good? You can't breathe. That's how good that crap was. And if you're new, you know there's a lot of fringe benefits drinking cheap whiskey, man. When you throw it up, you don't lose much, huh? Would it be hell to be out there drinking that $10 bourbon today? There she goes, you know. $10 all over the ground. Hell, that'll make you sick all over again. And if you knew, you probably thought I made that story up. It's original, huh? But hell, there ain't nothing original in AA, no. If it's good and usable, you take it from somebody else. You give the guy credit for three times, and after that, it's yours, buddy. That's the way it goes. And I don't want to leave you with the opinion that I drank nothing but cheap whiskey. I moved on to other stuff, too. But frankly, you know, after half a dozen drinks, how could you tell the difference? Whether it was cheap or it was expensive, and who cared? I'm looking for the effect and... That's what I got out of it. And I never stood around and had a long dissertation about what we're going to drink. If the guy says, you want to drink, I said, let's go. That was all. Because the best whiskey an Alky ever drank in his life was always somebody else's. You know that. So that was the beginning of, excuse me, of the blackouts, a little more trouble. By January of 42, I find myself back in Los Angeles. I'd made the can up in Oregon, and I got a writer out of state. I came back in. I was dead broke. I went to see my people. My people went to the probation department, and they in turn gave me the opportunity to go either to jail or to service. And this was January of 42, and we were in a state of war. I was in a state of shock, obviously. I was always faced with the lesser of two evils, and I'd been to jail. It was a bad deal, so I went to service. And I spent the following 4 years in the United States Navy, of which I was a disgrace to the United States Navy, because I took me and my attitude right with me. I went in and thought I'd be the youngest lieutenant commander the Navy ever had. I was the oldest seaman they had, you know. Every time I turned around, they got the arm on me. I had three court-martials. I had a deck, a summary of general. Did 11 and a half months in a Navy pen up there on the top of Goat Island, run by the Marine Corps. I won't even get into that. It was a rotten deal. I served maybe 60, 70 days solitary confinement on bread and water and some other miscellaneous things that aren't important, but all directly due to booze. I was fortunate that I was able to fulfill the commitment for 4 years. I got discharged out in Christmas Eve of 1945, and I'm no question in my mind, I'm alcoholic. I have crossed the invisible line. I can't live with the booze, and I can't live without it, and don't want to. My life revolves around booze. Everything. You know, you invite me to a party, qualify. What kind of party? It was a party and there's no drinking. I don't want to go. But if I got to go, I'm going to take booze along because I'm bored stiff unless I'm drinking. My life now is totally revolving around booze. I am alcoholic. I'm sure there's no question about it. 1946. It was a significant year in my life because I heard about AA in 1946. As you know and I know, God moves in strange and mysterious ways. And no matter what you do or you don't do, it's going to work out that way anyway. For how many times in my life have I said, I'll never do that, I'll never go there, I'll never see that guy again, I'll never, never, well, never is a hell of a long time. Yes, sir. And by golly, in spite of everything I do, or you do, certain things are going to work out that way anyway. In 1946, I made the statement I'd never go back to Pasadena again because it was a rotten town. They were hell on drunks. I'd been picked up on my second 502 that year, and I had two plain drunks on top of it. I was given a year suspended on 3-year probation by a judge that I knew like my father. He and I kind of grew up together. I knew him all my life, practically. You know, he's sitting on those different, he was shagging delinquents or whatever we were in those days, and then he sat on the police court bench, and he was looking at drunks, that's me, and he was a smart operator. He's no meathead. He got up on the Superior Court bench. I'm not a meathead either. I'm right with him. There we are, together, you know. And one thing I knew about him, by God, he'd never lied in his life, never. He said 60, 90, I'd always done it, so I knew. Yeah, he means business. If I come back to that town, I'm going to get a year in a can, and I was determined that I would not come back. And I stayed out of there maybe 2-3 months. Yeah, and then the inevitable. It got gotten good, you know, the prosperity. It got so good I couldn't stand it. I'm drinking down to one of the beach cities one night with a couple of high rollers, and I committed the cardinal sin. While I was drinking, I began to think. Yeah, that's a bad deal for an alky. He should either think or drink, but don't get them both going at the same time. No. I got to thinking about that rotten judge in that lousy town, and this is a free country, you know, and God, if I want to go back, I'm going back. I'm a veteran. I'm going back, yeah. So what the hell, I went back. I couldn't have been in the city, a couple of hours. I went down to a gin mill. I got a whole total load on. I got out and got in my car, pulled out, went down one of the main drags. I couldn't have gone a half a mile in. A car pulled in front of me. I'm so drunk I can't see it, and I hit it and ran from the scene of the accident because I'm frightened. I ended up maybe 3 blocks away at the outside where the police forced me to the curb and jerked me out of the car. And I woke up in the tank in the morning, and I read the booking slip, and I'm in on a 501 felony, drunk driving, hit and run, bodily injury involved. And but for the grace of God that looks after damn fools and drunks, why, 4 people didn't die out in the city street that night. And you know, when it gets a solly, I can't stand it. I like to remember how it was. You know, I like to remember that year of 46 when I crushed that car and thought that there was dead people inside. I like to remember standing in front of that judge and him telling me what kind of guy I was and then going on to the city jail and sharing a cell with a guy that went to AA. Isn't that odd, huh? God moves in strange ways. And out of all evil, a certain amount of good has got to come. The guy was going to AA. Once a week, he'd get out of the bucket to go to AA. The only guy in a can going to AA. And I got the cell. You know, and he's a fanatic. He goes, he's AA things. You know, what a hell of a guy. He just bored me stiff, you know. And you don't have a big audience in a jail cell, let me tell you. You know, and once a week I get the whole treatment. And finally got so bad, I said, Sully, for Christ's sake, shut up. I don't want to hear about AA. What do I want to hear it? Oh, I don't have a booze problem. I got a people problem. I believe that. The rotten people, they're my problem. Now, you get them rotten people straightened out there, man, it's going to be all right. Yeah. Your case is different. What the hell? A guy your age, you ought to quit drinking. You got nothing left. You're over the hill, buddy. You're 36. You know, yeah, I believed it then. I don't believe it today. God knows that. But then I thought, you know, you're gone. What the hell you got to contribute? Forget it. You go, I'll take care of the action. And I went out for another 8.5 years, and I took care of the action out there. But periodically through the years, I used to wonder about my buddy, and then before you know it, it was February of 54. And I'm getting up off of the floor, and it's God-directed. I go in, I call AA. I'm looking for a guy named Sully in AA. And I found AA, and I didn't find Sully. 5-6 years later, I heard through the grapevine Sully going back to drinking after 3 years on the program. He couldn't quit, and he was walking on his heels. When he found him, he had a wet brain. He said to put him in Camarillo Hospital, and Army's up there for the rest of his life. Isn't that a hell of a deal? And so I promptly forgot about my friend. And then 5 years ago, last December, I was in a Sunday morning meeting over in Pasadena. God, it's strange the way that thing Pasadena keeps coming in and out of my life. And I looked down the front row, and who was sitting there was a guy named Sully I'd shared a cell with maybe some 27 years ago. And I thought a moment, you know, God moves in strange and mysterious ways, don't you, Norman? No matter what you do or don't do, that's the way it's going to work, huh? And when the meeting was over with, I went up and said, man, we got to get together. You're the first sponsor I ever had, you know. You're the guy that told me about this deal. And I owe you. I'd like to lay some on you. And he said, Norm, I'll call you. And then he never did. And there's a Sunday following Thanksgiving. I got a phone call from your sister-in-law, and she said, and Sully went back out again, Norm, and this time he didn't make it. He died. He hemorrhaged internally. He bled to death before he got him to the hospital, and he's no longer around, and I'm sorry to tell you. And I was sorry to hear it. And once again, I wonder, why are these things necessary? Why is it that the guys have got to go back out again and try? Why is it that we've got to have the percentages in AA? I don't know. It's a God-directed. It's beyond me. I haven't the capacity, the education, and the vocabulary to explain things of this nature. When I came in, they said 50% of you guys are going to cut it the first trip. 25% are going to mess with it a while and eventually going to make it. And 25% are going to die or go crazy through the use of alcohol. And you wonder, why is it that these things are necessary? Why is it that a percentage have got to show this percentage here, that once an alcoholic, you die an alcoholic? I don't know. But evidently, it's a necessity. Well, I went out and left that city jail, as I mentioned. I drank a lot of whiskey. I went to work one of the largest construction firms in the world. I stayed with these people 11 years. In that 11-year period of time, I was blessed with being at the right place at the right time. I had a good job. And I needed a good job because I needed the money. I had a high overhead by now. I'd met and married a red-headed Irish woman. She's got a violent temper, a rotten disposition, yells at me all the time, and is pregnant every other year. You know, that's a hell of a deal. Got herself in that condition, you know, 8 times. It was incredible. I used to sit around at gin mills wondering how the hell it could happen when I was rarely home anymore either, you know. I have a lot of adverse conditions that I'm living under. And she has no sense of humor about my drinking. And she doesn't realize how sensitive I am. All alcoholics are very sensitive people, you know that. You're gone 2 or 3 days and you come home. Christ, you're tired. You've been busy out there, you know. You walk in the house and you want a little love, affection, and understanding. Huh? You walk in, hi, baby, how are you? You know, and from 20 feet she's yelling at me, you know. You're drunk again before she smells your breath. It was an incredible situation. You call her on the phone, and then she'd say, you're drinking, aren't you? And I'd jump out of that phone booth and look around. You know, where the hell is that guy? You know, I was determined she has somebody following me. Well, that's a terrible way to greet a guy. So you got to get her on the defensive. You know, she'd say, you're drunk again. I'd say, who, me? You know, like 37 guys are with you. You know who she's talking to, you know. But you got to regroup. You got to get her on the defensive. So then you introduce yourself to her. You say, I'm old Norm, baby. That's who the hell I am. And that gets her right there, you know. She's been talking to the same slob for over 8 years, but you want to be reassured she really knows, and you let her in on a secret. You want to let her know how good she's got it, and you tell her, baby, you know, every loving thing you got, you know, I gave to you. This house you're living in and the food you're eating and the clothes you're wearing, and by God, you be nice to me. And she's hysterical by now. She knows the deal. Yeah, you're 3 months behind in a house payment. You know, they're eating water on the post-toasties because you can't make the milk bill. And her wardrobe, she's standing in it right there, you know. But you want to impress her. And then she was, you know, how they mimic it. You know, I'm old Norm, that's who I am, you know. Oh, Jesus. Sometimes that happens when you got your best friend with you, you know. Your new business partner, you've invited him home. You met him in the saloon last night. And the reason he's coming home with you is, hell, he don't want to go home alone either, does he? No. Blind leading the blind. I say, baby, you embarrass me in front of my best friend. And I couldn't think of his name. No. And I say, you shut that Irish mouth, woman, or I'm leaving. And she go down and throw my clothes out. Jesus, that's embarrassing. And to save face, you got to pick the damn clothes up and you carry them out to the car. Yeah. The old clothes packing alky, man, he's a joy to the neighborhood out there. Yeah, he's better than Gunsmoke, I'll tell you that. Yeah, here he goes, loading it in and out. There he goes. Oh, God, he's funny tonight, isn't he? Yeah. Honks his horn, you know. I'm leaving. Honk, honk, I'm going, he tells everybody, you know. He knows the neighborhood is concerned about him, and he honks all the way down. I'll never be back. He's gone. 2 days later, here he comes again, you know. Yeah, he's coming in, and God, look, his face the color of hawk meat. He's got the death grip on the steering wheel. Got the flat tire, he's driving on it, the old rim driver coming in, the tire's flopping and popping, you know, here he comes, turns the car into the driveway, up on the lawn, opens the door, he falls out, there he is out there. And the alky gets up off of the lawn and he says to himself, I wonder if anybody saw me, yes. He is deeply concerned about his reputation. Alcoholics worry a lot about their reputation. We worry so much about it, we lay around on lawns and in hedges and on sidewalks and in drug tanks worrying about, oh, no, what people think about me, you know. Oh, yeah. Well, you can see under these conditions, it's a hell of a deal. I can't do a lot of drinking around the house. It's very difficult. So I drink out of the house. I would have probably anyway, because I like them saloons. I like the dark lights. I like the rotten music. I like them intellectual giants I met. Man, I like sitting around there talking about all the big deals. Talking in millions and spending in thousands. Never had $10. Form the corporations, put the partnerships together. Wonder what the poor slobs are doing tonight. The big money's all around, yeah. When you get tired of talking and lying to each other, you can sit there and look in that mirror. And they got mirrors and bars so that alcoholics can get Maybellini. You know, they get that Maybelline look, that wide-eyed, you know. There you are, you devil, you, yeah. Incredible how good-looking you got in the last half an hour, you're saying there.
You know, going through all of it.
As you bring the drink up, you notice your arm. Oh, Christ, you're a killer, too. You're well-built, yeah. 155 ringing wet in them days. I couldn't lick my lips, let alone anybody else, but that whiskey makes a lover and a killer out of you. And sometimes you get you drunk, you can't remember. What am I, a lover or a killer tonight, yeah? You wonder why all the dollies aren't down there, man. You got her going, huh? Good-looking, well-built, intellectual, and wealthy. Got that $30 smiling Frankie Gordon suit on. Got 50 cents worth of whiskey all down in front of you there. You like chili? You got chili all over you, you understand? Smell bad, can't talk, mumble a lot. You know, how the hell can you be romantic when that's all you can say? Just before you fall off the bar stool or you end up in the men's room, it's a pay toilet. You can't get in, no change, huh? So you slide under the door. There's got to be some old door sliders here tonight, I'm sure. And then the alkie, he always slides out again. You know, you're so drunk you don't know that once you get in, you can open it and walk out, huh?
Well, hell no. You know, here he goes out again, you know. Coming in, going out. What the hell is that? There's usually a couple of guys waiting for you. What are you doing there, you know? Oh, God, you get up off of the floor, walk out to get your car, which you can't find, so you wander around for the half an hour or so searching for your car. You lost the damn thing. And a lot of car losers in AA. You don't call some non-alcoholic friend and ask him if he's seen your car. That's embarrassing. Did you ever ask a non-alcoholic if he's seen your car? Yeah, I'll never forget it. You only do it one time because it's humiliating. I'd had a bad night, and I ended up in the bucket out in Azusa. And I called my neighbor. He's an attorney. I said, Julie, will you come down and get me out of the can? And he said, okay, I'll be down again. And so he come down, he got me out of the can. And as we're walking out, he says, Norman, let's get your car and go home, and I'll follow you. And I looked at him and says, Julie, you don't have to know where my car is. And now he's got the Maybelline look, the wide-eyed, you know, He stares at you, you know. What the hell are you talking about? You lost your car? For Christ's sake, how could you lose your car, Norm? I bet a car weighs over 4,500 pounds, Norm. And you want to tell him how easy it is, but because you do it a half a dozen times a year, you know, you just get a little drunky and lose him out there, but you can't because he'll never understand, so you just stand there and kind of say, well, yeah, I lost it, and go on from there. Well, I think the ultimate of the evening for an alcoholic is the night he finds his car. It's kind of a spiritual experience, really. You know, you're walking down the street. There it is, you know, my car. Jesus, it hasn't been impounded. You're delighted over it. You open old car door and get in and go to bed in there, right? Get your head screwed up under the armrest. You know, that's why Alky's got neck trouble, you know. That door handle's stuck in your ear. Wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and you're deathly ill. You think your window's down, it's up. Blah, you know, rap, knock. You knock the hell out of your head and you throw up all down the front of you. And you say to yourself, drinking's fun. Yeah. I'm a victim of unusual booze. They got a lot of bad booze in L.A. I got to get the hell out of here. It's going to be different next time. Isn't that the story of all alcoholics' lives? Next time, it's going to be different. They get me down to Big Spring, Texas. Man, it's going to be different when I get back down there. Hell, they love me down there. Or was it Dallas where they love me? Or maybe it was Moses Lake, Washington, or Seattle, or maybe it's Albuquerque. It's always somewhere. It's going to be different, and you're sure of it. And you trudge that road, that lottery of your life, trying to get the handle on it. Trying to drink like my old man and my brothers and the guys I'm working with, because I know somewhere someday it's going to be different. I know that. And as I trudged that road, the booze took away every loving thing I owned that meant anything to me. It's inevitable. You know, if you're an alcoholic and you drink enough booze long enough and hard enough, the booze gets it all. There, little by little, you just give it enough time. The wheels of alcoholism grind very slow but very fine, and you, all you got to do is give it enough time, and it gets every loving thing you own that means anything to you. I recall the day vividly. I drove home to the house that I lived. I drove in and parked the car, get out, and I go in, and I'm scheming, you know. You always scheme. One more lie, one more promise, baby. You stand there with the third act, the tears running down, say, baby, Jesus, give me a break. Now throw me out. What the hell? Think of the kids, baby. I got a deal for you. Now, that priest you told me about, I'm going down to take another pledge for you. That's what I'm going to do for you, baby. You know, and you scheme and you plot and you lie. You're sincere sometimes. You mean it, but you can't. You can't identify with anything. You can't find the handle because you're sure maybe next time it's going to be different. And you finally scheme yourself back into the house. And when you get in, then you start scheming to get back out again, right? Well, that day, there's no scheming. That day, I walk in the house, and I'm prepared. And she's not even sore. She just told me, Norm, you're a drunken bum, Norm. What the hell? You'll never live to be 35 years old. You're drinking yourself to death. Yeah, the kids are neurotic because of you. We're scared to death of you here in this home. We don't know when you're coming in or how you're coming in. You're going to bust up the house again tonight, Norm? You're going to stand there with that gun and load it, and one night the gun goes off and somebody dies in the house, don't you? She says, I spent 8 years sitting here looking through the front room window waiting to see your car come home. Night after night after night, I wait to see your car come home. That's a hell of a way to operate, Norm. I can't go through it anymore. I've called an attorney. I've asked for separate maintenance. I put a restraining order against you, Norm. You don't live here no more. Get the hell out of our life. And then the paradoxical statement, I'll always love you, but you tore out all the feeling. I got no feeling for you one way or another. I just want you the hell out of our life. And so you trudge on out to your automobile and you drive away and you make that profound statement, huh? Why me? I say, why me? Why don't you get Charlie? Christ, he don't even work. Charlie don't work. Why don't you get him, huh? I'm not that bad a guy. And then you start in and you say that, why did I do it this time? Why did I get so drunk this time? This time, why? Why? And the answers never come. Sure, if you're new, it doesn't necessarily always have to work out that way. There's cases, you know, of people coming in, they still got it together. Their woman or their man, whatever it is, they walk through the door, they're still together. They walk through. That's a miracle. Christ, that's one of the biggest miracles of this program, if the woman and the man are still together when they come into their first AA meeting. You know, they're tearing it up for 20 years. You know, I wouldn't put up with that crap 20 minutes, let alone 20 years. God gives them a lot of strength, I guarantee it. No, 20 years. See them walk through the door the first meeting, huh? They're still there together. The guy's sick. And you look at the woman, she's sick too. And in her eyes is a story. And the story, it doesn't change too much. It says, you know, this guy's tried everything in the world out there. Hell, none of it worked. I'm not so sure this is going to work either. And then you see the same couple 2-3 months later, and the guy's kind of sharped out now. Looks pretty good. And you look at the woman, she's changed too. And in her eyes is a new story. The story seems to say, I've been waiting 20 years for this to happen. And finally it's happened, and we're happier than we've ever been in our life. And it's made possible through a unique miracle that you and I here choose to call Alcoholics Anonymous, huh? If you knew that ain't something we can guarantee you, though. We can't say that's the way it's going to be. We don't have that to offer you. We got sobriety and a way of life, and whatever you are, you're going to be better at. We don't guarantee you're going to make a ton of scratch or drive the big iron and live in the big old house on a hill, or your woman's coming home, no. Or your man, whatever the case may be. No. Sobriety, a way of life, whatever you are, you'll be better at. You're a ditch digger. You'll be a better ditch digger. And if you'll stick around and buy the package, we'll throw in one more, the sweetest thing you ever had in your life, your self-respect. Isn't that a hell of a deal? The sweetest thing a man ever had in his life, his self-respect. But as he trudged that road of alcoholism, he lost it. One day a man walked into my life. He says, Norm, you've abused the privilege of owning it. Took it away. He took away my self-respect. I know guys that spent hundreds, thousands, and millions trying to buy it. No deal. You don't check it out down there at the supermarket. It's not a commodity, no. Many men lose it and they die trying to regain it. We have AA. The second time around in one life, we have the opportunity to be reinstated with self-respect. And if I had to isolate one thing that drove me down on my knees and brought me into this program, I'd say it was the day I really realized I had nothing going inside, that I had no respect for myself. I'm sure it was a total of many things, an aggregate, but if I had to isolate one thing, it was the day that I couldn't tolerate the feeling inside, the remorse, the hatred of myself. The looking into myself in the morning and finding it so very difficult to wash my face because I had to look at me. The day arriving when it don't make much difference anymore what anybody thinks about you. It's what you know about and think about yourself that's important. You know, you can still kid every man jack in town out there, drunk or sober, Norm. You know that. But it don't make any difference anymore, does it, huh? Because you can't kid yourself any longer. It becomes very important what you as an individual and I as an individual know about each other and ourselves. This becomes maybe a psychological second in the alcoholic's life when he's totally sick and tired of being sick and tired. I want to believe it. I want to believe that was the day that it came on in. And I got up off of the floor and through the direction of a God as I understand him. He sent me on into the telephone. I picked it up and I called information and I asked for AA. And that was February of 1954. And I called them. And I'm looking for this buddy of mine. And as I mentioned, I couldn't find him. But I talked to a guy by the name of Johnny Carroll. I'm sure he doesn't mind me breaking his anonymity. He was one hell of a man. He passed away after being sober a couple of years, but he took a lot of time that day, and he told me about this program. And he said, if I was sincere about this program, he said, here's some numbers to call, son. He said, start calling these numbers. And he said, somebody will answer eventually, and they will come out, and they will see you. And so I called, and by golly, I got a hold of a man, and he came out to see me. And when he arrived, I kind of wished he hadn't, because he was one of those hard-hearted sponsors. You know the kind. Went to school for hard-hearted sponsors in L.A. I used to think they had some kind of classroom. Be mean, be rotten, be tough or something. But and we had a generation gap. He was maybe 18 or 20 years older than I was. And we just didn't hit it off. And it was a coincidence. His name was Norm, too. And he was one hell of a guy, believe me. Just a marvelous individual. We didn't see eye to eye on many things, but he was still the greatest man in the world because he was my sponsor. But that day, he was the world's worst because his attitude towards the program was, if you want this program, you got to want it as bad as you wanted that booze. That's the way he paralleled it. He said, you went to any length to get that booze, buddy. You go to any length to get this AA. He said, you lied, cheated, conned, stole, walked, drove, any length. He said, you went to get that booze, and so you'll go to any length to get this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, I'm going to tell you something now, buddy. You need us, and we don't need you, and you remember that. He said, you got a car, you drive, I'll meet you at the meeting. I don't pick guys up and take them. It's a softer, easier way. And he says, frankly, if you got a car, what the hell, you ain't ready yet. No. He said, if you ain't got a car, buddy, you take a bus, and if you haven't got the bus money, he says, you can walk. He says, you walk for that booze many days in your life, and you can walk for sobriety in this program. And that's the way he put it out. And obviously, I didn't like him. You know, one insurmountable mass meeting another, that was he and I. You know, we got that personality conflict right there. I'm ready to, you know, I'm very upset. And the only thing I liked about him is when he said, if I can make it, you can. And I thought, boy, ain't that the truth. If that rotten old man could make it, God, anybody could make it. And I could hardly wait to get in my car that night and drive down to that Temple City group, and he would be in the parking lot, and I would crush him with my car. That's what I would do. The old Temple City group met down Rosemead in those days. They now meet in Temple City. You know, I'm sorry, Arcadia. They never got to Temple City. Isn't that odd? They call it Temple City. They met in Rosemead, and they're now in Arcadia. And I remember asking a guy one time, how come you don't change the name of the group? And he said, what are you trying to do, run this outfit? You know, so. But we used to meet down there in the Legion Hall. Now on the corner was a liquor store. And next door was a cemetery. And the cliche of the group was, if you get by here and stop here, you won't make it over there. Ha, 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 you know. They tell all the new guys, you keep drinking, you're going to die. Isn't that funny? Ha, ha. What the hell's so funny? You got a hangover and the guy's telling you you're dead. You know, I don't want to hear all that crap. Alcoholics, if they get sober, they got a warped sense of humor. Well, I'm taken on into the group that night. It's a very wealthy group. The reason you knew it was a wealthy group was the amount of donuts we had. We had donuts before and after the meeting. That meant it was a well-heeled group. We bought 6 or 7 of these red jelly donuts. We saved them for new guys, yeah. You see a new guy coming through the door, he's all green and hung out. And the red jelly donut committee had slid up on him, you know. Glad to have you here. Yeah, how about a cup of coffee and how about a red jelly donut here? Oh, ha, ha, you know. God, it gets you right. No, no. Did you ever look at a red jelly donut when you got a hangover? You know, it gets you right. No, I don't want a donut. It looks like something I left in the street last night. I don't want a donut. Thanks anyway. And they all laughed. You know, did you see him? Yeah, he was better than the guy last week, wasn't he, Hall? And then the meeting begins, and the guy stands up in front of the group, and he tells everybody what a jackass he is, and they become hysterical over the fact the guy's in jail all the time, and people beating him up. He talked about drinking something called Jamaica Ginger, give him the Jake leg, you know. Crumpled him up, he said, for 2.5 months he was in a hospital, he always is hysterical, you know. Jesus, ain't that funny, he can't walk. God, Isn't that a hell of an introduction to anything? And your sponsor's a nudger. They're all nudgers. Going, did you hear it? Did you hear it? Did you hear it? You know. If he's not doing it, your wife is. You know. Jesus. They got you in the front row. You ain't deaf. No, I can hear it all. But you don't say anything. You just sit there and you listen to all this. And then immediately you think, I can't make it. I can't qualify. How the hell can I qualify in AA? I haven't been around. I haven't been like that guy. I've been 70, 80 jails, drank that juice I never heard of. No, I've been in maybe 25 jails, drank a little Vitalis, you know. I'm a novice in the thing. I don't really belong. I got no story. That guy made a hell of a statement that night, and all them talkers in the early years, they always made sure they said it. He said, buddy, and I thought he was talking right at me. He says, it don't make any difference what you drank, or where you drank it, or how much you drank, or how old you are. He said, it's what it's doing to you. And if it's tearing up any part of your life, you don't have to go any farther. And when he said that, I wanted to come out of the chair. I want to say, buddy, you better believe it. It's tearing the hell out of my life. I don't want to go no farther. I don't want to hurt myself anymore out there. I'm not so sure I want to quit drinking, but God, I don't want to hurt anymore. And as I looked at that guy that night, you know, I had a feeling I didn't have to. I looked at that guy that night, I know I don't have to hurt no more if I don't want to. What the hell, there it is. There's a guy standing there, you know, 9.5 years of sobriety. He's making it. The identification. You know, well-meaning people all my life had tried to lay it on me. They told me, you know, Norm, you drink too much. Norm, you're destroying your life. Norm, you destroyed the kids. Norm, you know, Norm. And I knew this, and I tried to grab it and get the handle on it. What the hell, it wasn't there because I couldn't identify with what the hell they were talking about. And then I look at this guy up there. There he stands. He's a street man. Comes off them L.A. streets. The old L.A. Central Avenue group put that meeting on that night. He come off them streets out there, and I knew what the hell he was talking. I could identify with part of that, man. I know he knows what he's talking about. He literally crawls out, but he was no street man that night, no. He's standing there that night, and he's clean, and he's sharp, and he's happy, and his eyes are clear, and he laughs all the time, sure. And he's got a set of threads on. I bet them threads cost that guy 100 and a half. And I'm thinking to myself, man, if he didn't get nothing else from AA, didn't he get a set of drapes out of it? Boy, that's all right, you know. I'm going to stick around a little bit. I'll give me some drapes, too. I like what I saw. And it brings back the cliche that you heard time and time again. What he is speaks so loud, I cannot hear a word he says. By example is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You like what you see, you come back to see some more. And I was kind of determined that I would walk back and see some more. The only other thing I took out of that meeting that night was that that guy had had a hell of a trip. And that above all, his woman had left him. And divorced him. And remarried. And he said, all my kids, they all hated me. But he said, one day, I bought the package of this program. And the kids came down to see me. They learned to like me, to respect me, and to love me. And if I'd have looked around that night, I'd have seen it all. I'd have seen a half a dozen of these big, tough AA guys sitting in that AA meeting where the tears would be running down their eyes. And there was the story. The story was told. They laughed because they were miserable, and they cried because they were happy, and they called it Alcoholics Anonymous. And maybe that's oversimplification, but it's my understanding of the program because, frankly, I don't know a better way to clear away the wreckage of my rotten, lousy past, to move all that crap out, than to be able to laugh a little bit about it, huh? When you come in, there ain't nothing to laugh about, is there? You sit in them meetings, you determine you're never going to laugh, but in spite of yourself, some nights you sit there and you're laughing a little. It's kind of a relief. It's like the safety valve going off. And all the crap and all the rubbish and all the wreckage of the past and the wreckage maybe of the future that will walk down the road. And you clean it on out. And you put yourself in some kind of a position to get the whole package, huh? To make that big transition, to quit taking and start giving a little. Giving a something to somebody and want nothing in return. That's what AA is about. It's a giving program. Everything we talk about, you know, the guy stood up there and he says, you didn't buy it, you can't sell it, you got to give it. You give it, Norm, you give it, that's it, huh? And the more you give, the better it is. You can't keep what you don't give away, and they go on, and they go on, and talk about the place for all. Picking up the ashtrays, making the coffee. Secretary of the group. Central Service, General Service, Institutional Work. 12-step call. Dozens of ways that you and I as individuals can give. And it's so very difficult for people like me, because basically I'm not a giver. I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things and a user of people. I'm a loser. All takers are losers. I had nothing in my life. Nothing. Until I learned to give and wanted absolutely nothing in return, the no compromise kind, the kind you don't twist and use and turn for your own benefit. And what is the reward? The man says, the reward. And I said the same thing to the man. What is the reward? The reward is insurmountable, he said. Not something in a material sense, but in a sense of well-being, I'll guarantee you the world. Sense of well-being. That's what I looked for in a whiskey, was a sense of well-being, and I got it. I used to drink that whiskey, and I start feeling good. Now to get that buzz on, I get a little more to get buzzier. And I hit that plateau, and now I'm just buzzy all over. And I'd order one more just to stay even. Bam, down the chute I'd go. And I'd wake up in the morning, the buzz is gone. The sense of well-being is gone. And a friend of mine is back to see me. You knew him. Remorse. He walked in every morning. He tore my guts out, every day. And to get him out of my life, why, I'd drink a little whiskey. I'd drink a little whiskey, I got no remorse. Yeah, but it was a temporary situation. And I traded that in one night for the sense of well-being I've been able to experience in here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And all I've had to do is be willing to give a little for the hell of it. And want nothing back. Calling on that guy out there, that 12-step call. On the night you don't want to go. You walk out of the car 6 or 7 times you've gone to see this guy. You don't want to go see him. He's always drunk. And on the way to the car, you say, I hope I sprained my ankle. Christ, I don't want to go see him. But you go. It's a God-directed thing. You go, and you go in to see him, and you sit there, and you're talking to him. And it's the middle of the night. You got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, but you hang, and you're talking to him. And in his eyes, something's changed. Something's different. In his eyes are maybe tears, and maybe there's that thing that says, Jesus, I got it. I got it this time. Jesus, Norm, I'm glad you came, Norm. And that feeling you get, huh? As you sit in your car, and you drive away, and you're no longer tired. That sense of well-being, you know, you give a little of yourself to another guy, and you want nothing back, because you knew you'd be repaid. He would have it, and then he would give it to another guy, and another guy would give it to another guy, and on down the road it would be an Alcoholics Anonymous. And to me, this is the total program. This is the story of it all, and it's totally uncomplicated. But I, for myself, have made it complicated, obviously. You see, the second meeting I went to was damn near the last. The second meeting I went to was over in Pasadena. Where the hell else would I go to the second meeting but that rotten town? Went over there to this old-timers meeting he got in Pasadena. You know, I had to be sober 10 years to read the steps in them days. The speaker that night been in AA 137 years. You know, old-timer talking about that. And this guy, God love me, since dead, but I learned to love him. But not that night, I don't love him that night. That night when he talks, he always shows a picture of himself. Great big blown-up mugshot taken up when he's doing time in the county jail. And, you know, the point he tried to get across was, look at me when I'm drinking. Look at me now. I look at a picture. I look at Artie. I thought, Jesus, he looked better drunk, that guy did. Yeah. I got to get the hell out of this outfit. I aged the hell out of these guys. You know, I'm gone. Sure, the next day I went out and bought a pint of whiskey, and I took a big drag out of it, and I threw it away, and from that day to this, it hasn't been necessary to take a drink. God moves in strange ways. My sponsor said, I'll meet you at 3 meetings. And I didn't want him to think I couldn't get to 3 meetings. And the third meeting I go to, I walks into the meeting, and I'm overwhelmed with 6 guys, and they're all about the same age. And we kind of got together that night. We started going to meetings together. We started having meetings after the meetings. We even incorporated a flaky cop that was out there. Jesus, I met him, you know, the first week. I thought, a cop in AA? What the hell's he doing in AA? You know, what's a cop doing here? You know, no matter where you go, you got the rag pickers. You know, I told him. And my sponsor says, you know, cops drink too, Norm. Yeah, let them in. That's all right. Well, it was a funny thing. The guy turned out to be one of my closest, dearest friends. He's a sponsor within a sponsor. When I get jammed up, you know, I drive to San Gabriel looking for a motor cop. Year after year, and I'd always find him, and he'd always lay a little on me. We celebrate our birthdays together, and he's got 30 years in. One hell of a guy. But he was kind of a rebel in those days, and he was the oldest of the group because he had a lot of sobriety. But we wouldn't cut him in on these meetings we had after the meetings because he was overpowering. He had several years of sobriety, and you don't want a guy with that much sobriety around. So, because you can't have those in-depth inventories taken, you see. And we get a lot of those inventories taken, and we noticed immediately there were a lot of cliques in AA, so we formed our own clique to be against the other cliques. That was very important. And then we knew there were a lot of flaky leaders, speakers, talkers in the San Gabriel Valley, and we knew to change that. And if AA were to survive, we'd have to get one of our guys in as secretary of the largest group in the valley. And immediately we filed whatever was necessary, but they said, you got to have a year of sobriety, sonny, you know. Well, we hung back and waited. They ain't running us off for a year, I'll tell you that. No, and we hung in spite of everything. And then this Pollock, he gets a year in, old Stan. And we run him for secretary. See, this big group. And on election night, they said, there's no politics in AA. Don't you believe it? We went down to El Monte and to Baldwin Park, and we imported on election night. Yeah. Got old Stan become secretary of that group by a landslide. Yes, hooray. And a week later, he joined the other cliques. Yeah. And then you come to find out that the only clicking in AA is a click, click, clicking in your head. And it gives you the opportunity to look around. And what do you see in AA? You see people, don't you, huh? People from all walks of life. People I wouldn't do a lot of drinking with. God knows there's a hell of a lot of people that do no drinking with me. Some people I'm not going to share all my sobriety with them. And they're not going to share all theirs with me. But as an old buddy of mine told me, who passed away a few years ago, he says, "Buddy, there ain't a man or a woman in this program that dislike you so bad he'd like to see you take a drink. Isn't that a hell of a deal, huh?" He may disagree with everything you stand for, Norm, in your business life, your AA life, your personal life. But would you call him up? You know something? He'd be there. That's true. You call him up and he'd be there. And he'd sit there with compassion and with understanding. Because he wouldn't want to see you go out there in that jungle and get caught in that grinder one more time. He'd sit there and he'd help you. Even though he disagreed with everything in your life, everything you stood for, he would be there to help. That's got to be a hell of a deal. That's got to be the best deal I ever had in my life. And I'd love to tell you from those days forward, you know, every day's been a holiday and every meal's a banquet. I wish it were. But that isn't the way it is it, huh? As my sponsor said, we're going to give you sobriety, a way of life, and the equipment to stand out there in that jungle and be counted like everybody else. He says it's going to be difficult out there to take those lousy, rotten, heartbreaking, grief-ridden days. He said, but if you're big enough, Norm, to take the good days, you got to be big enough to take the bad and the rotten and the lousy. And those are tough. 1962, man, that was a rotten year out there. I got a bad program going. I let my ego overrule my good sense. I find myself into a business situation, not a job, but a business situation with some other people. And I got no business being in there, you know, but I'm in on it. These guys are out of my class. Man, I'm telling you, are they? They ate my lunch, let me tell you. God. And before the middle of the year, I got an honest desire to take a drink. And there is no question about it. I got that Arab thirst. I can taste that whiskey going down. Not once, a half a dozen times. You know, I really got the desire. I'm down in Florida. I'm trying to put one of the last pieces together on something that ain't going to make. And I know it, you see. But the ego is driving me in there. And it ain't going to get. And I go down to a saloon out there in Miami Springs. I got no business in it. Yeah, this is the drinking world. I live in the sober world. What the hell am I doing in this gin mill? But I'm in there, and I sat down in the bar stool, and the bartender comes up and says, "What do you have?" I said, "Give me a double." There it is. Yeah. Before you know it, them bartenders act. Bam, there it is. And I didn't reach. But for the grace of God, I looks after damn fools and drunks and people trying to make this program, huh? Maybe he took me back for a minute and let me remember who I was, just for a moment. Maybe he says, "Norm, for crying out loud, everything from the county jail is up in your life, buddy." Yeah, up. Don't you remember when it was tough out there, Norm, huh? Don't you remember laying in the slammers? Don't you remember Big Spring, Texas, laying on the dirt floor and the cockroaches running over your head, Norm? What the hell don't you remember? You think it's tough now? Remember, my friend. God gave me the strength to go back and remember. He gave me the strength to finish out the year, not make any more bad decisions. He gave me the strength to stand one more time and try to be counted at the end of the year when I left St. Luke's Hospital and and was told of the situation that happened in our family. And I said, "You can't do it. You can't have the boys." But they took them. They took them. "So why?" I said, "Why?" I stood there, you know, "God, what the hell are you doing? Why'd you take the boys? For Christ's sake, you don't have to do that. I can't, you know, it's too big to carry. The cross is too big. Yet inside you know, the old shooter upstairs, he's a kind guy. He never gives you more than what you can carry. The big loads to the big horses. The small ones, he always gives the guy's name Norm. Instead of standing around Norm crying a poor mouth about what you didn't get, take a minute out of your busy day, Norm. Look down the busy street. What'll you see? I see a man on any street I want to look. He carries a load 10 times the size of mine. But he carries his with great dignity, don't he? He don't find it necessary to cry the poor mouth about what he didn't get or what he was asked to carry. He stood out there and he was counted." And I say, now today, this day now, right this moment, I say, "Buddy, God, as I understand, you give me the strength. Give me the strength to say thanks. Thank you for what you gave me. Thank you for the 23 years you let me walk down the sunny side of the street. What the hell if I don't get any more than that? You know and I know I'm overpaid. I know guys that never saw 23 days out there or 23 weeks. I know guys that walk the street of booze and fantasy, busted dreams and broken hearts, tears by the bucketful. I seen them die out there in them rotten traps. I seen them, you know, spend a lifetime of coming from behind. When I drank, I come from behind all the time. The world had the heat on me. The world told me how to live. And they said, if you don't do this, we're going to do that to you and that to you and that to you, huh? And I perpetually justified my existence out there to all of them. But for 23 years, no way. I get up in the morning, I don't have to justify my existence out there to nobody out there, no. I'll get out there into that jungle, and I'll walk in the sun. The sun will shine all day, and it may be raining, but the sun is out there. And I'll feel respect for me, inside myself. And maybe this day I get lucky, I meet a man, and he respects me, too. Not for where I've been or where I'm trying to go, but what I am right now. And maybe I can finish out the day and do a good job, be a competitor in the jungle out there. Maybe I can go on home tonight. That's what I'll do. I'll go home. To the house where I live. And I live in a house, and I'll walk in. And I'll be met by a woman, and she'll be my woman. And she's going to be redheaded and Irish, and she's glad I'm coming in. And she respects me because I'm her old man. No more, no less. And nobody cries at my joint today because their old man is drunk and tearing it up. And I haven't heard a kid of mine scream at me for years for me not to hit their mother. Not taking daughters downtown. I bought her their first pair of high-heeled shoes. I seen them make the transition from chickens into women. And I put them in them prom dresses and seen them, you know, really come out. And I felt the respect in their eyes for me. I'm their old man. And I seen them jerks come to the house and take them out, too, I'll tell you. Jesus, they get jerkier every year, I swear to... You know, just the other night, hello, Mr. Alfie, how are you? You know, oh, Christ, he makes me want to throw up. Get him out of here, you know, God. I could never think I was that bad. I must have been. I must be getting older. I don't know. But I have been able to experience this, huh? I've been able to experience sending out invitations to a wedding, and then people come. 400 invitations for people. And they come. What the hell, I can remember the day I sent 400 invitations out for people to come to see me shot. Nobody comes. Yeah. But that day they come. 400 sitting in a church that day. The music begins. And the oldest chicken, she walks out the aisle, out the door, into the aisle, to see me, her old man, all dressed in white, man, and she's crying when she sees me, and she makes me cry. And I walk down the aisle, and we're both crying. I look out there in the audience, 80, 90, my AA buddies sitting, big, tough AA guys sitting out there. Man, they're all crying, them AA guys. Them AA guys cry better than anybody out there. Sure. And we're crying not for the sadness or the uniqueness, but for the happiness of it all, huh? For the feeling the one Alky's got for another because he's cutting it and making it out there. The words seem to jump out of his eyes. Says, Norm, Jesus, you look good, buddy. God, you look so good, huh? And I see him there, Charlie and Fred and Bill. And you look so good, too, my friend. And I'm glad you're here. I'm glad I'm able to share this thing with you and you with me. And there's no words to totally explain the feeling that one alcoholic has for another. The ultimate end of that day was that I was to have to give this chicken to this jerk. This jackass. She marries this guy. You know what the hell? Look at this big jackass here, huh? Now, this guy turns out to be a dentist. Now, isn't that something, huh? That's a miracle within itself. I got my own personal dentist. You know, ain't many guys can say that. In or out of AA. I don't need appointments, nothing. I go in and see him. Well, anytime I want to see him. I tell him, you know, do something. I go, what the hell it is there? Some days he squirts a little water around, and I go, you know. And I tell him, don't send me a bill, and he laughs. He knows I got an ego problem. He just goes along with it, you know. Oh, the jackass sober, yeah, that's all, you know. But isn't that a deal, been walking the middle of the night with phone calls to say, how are you, grandfather? You got another granddaughter. I could go on and relate to the miracles of my life and the sun that I've seen, the feelings I've experienced. But there's never adequate words. I can only say, buddy, if you knew, every loving thing I am today, good, bad, or indifferent, is because of this program. And don't take a mental giant to figure it out. Because when I got here, you got nothing. And anyway, where you want to cut it, nothing from nothing leaves nothing. So every loving thing I may have today is because of this, because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's been a long walk from the L.A. County Jail to the point that I stand today. And but to the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous and all you fine friends and people, I could have missed it all. Thanks a million. God bless you.